Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Phil Dierking, Jill Robbins, and Brian Lynn. Later, Anna Mateo will have this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Observers are saying Emmanuel Macron's election as president of France is a victory for Europe. The election was not close. Macron received 66% of the vote compared to Marine Le Pen's 34%. The president of the European Commission congratulated Macron on Twitter. "Happy that the French have chosen a European future," he tweeted. A spokesman for Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel called the result a victory for a strong and united Europe. Le Pen, the National Front candidate, had said during the campaign that she would withdraw France from the European Union. She also opposed open immigration policies and called for tough measures against terrorism and crime. The final runoff election took place 2 weeks after 11 candidates competed in the first round of the presidential election. For the first time, none of France's traditional parties were represented in the final vote. Socialist President François Hollande chose not to seek another term in office. Macron served in Hollande's socialist administration, but he started his own movement called En Marche last year. Ben Haddad, a French analyst with the Hudson Institute in Washington, D.C., says the 39-year-old president-elect represents a number of firsts for France.
This is the youngest French president ever, who was virtually unknown 3 years ago, created his own movement from scratch just a year ago, and is winning in landslide with an optimistic, reform-oriented, pro-European liberal message.
Haddad told VOA that the election showed that the two main political parties in France did not find public support in this election. He said French voters are expecting something new. Macron has called for reforms to France's economy, including its job market, to deal with the country's high unemployment. He also called for reform of the EU. However, he will need to build support in the French legislature, where his movement currently has no representation. Macron has no experience as an elected official. Macron, however, has strongly supported the EU. European officials considered the French election very important because of Britain's vote to leave the EU in June 2016. France is a founding member of the European Union and is the second largest country remaining in it after Germany. If France left the EU, it might signal the end of the huge multinational organization. The vote brought to an end one of France's most divisive presidential campaigns. Marine Le Pen quickly conceded the election on Sunday, but she promised to continue efforts to get voters to fight globalization and an open immigration policy. she promised to oppose the new president's policies in the upcoming elections for the legislature in June. Le Pen led the National Front, a conservative party started by her father. In Sunday's vote, she received a little more than one-third of the votes cast. However, she received a much higher percentage than her father, Jean-Marie Le Pen, who ran for president in 2002. Marine Le Pen ousted her father from the National Front because of his extreme views. During the campaign, she stepped down as party leader in an effort to increase her appeal. Fewer voters took part in the election than expected, possibly because of anger over the combative campaign and traditional politics. French officials said 4 million people submitted blank votes. Although Macron has won a big victory, he still faces critics both inside and outside the country. Britain's Nigel Farage led the campaign to leave the EU in his country. He said Macron's victory will guarantee that Le Pen will win in the next election in 2022. He said the French are not ready to leave the EU, but one day they will. I'm Mario Ritter.
The Chinese government is creating its own version of the online source of information, Wikipedia. China's version is expected to be released next year. It will include around 300,000 entries on subjects including science, literature, history, and politics. The government chose professors and experts to write the entries. Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia that is edited almost completely by the public. The Chinese version will be written by experts chosen by the government. The writers say truth is their guiding light, and their editing process will be demanding. Zhang Baichun is chief editor of the History of Science and Technology section. He said that if there are any differences of opinion about facts, a committee will try to solve the problem. He told the Associated Press, "Of course, science does not come from democratic votes. To convince others, you will have to present the most convincing proof." This project is led by the Communist Party's Central Propaganda Department. It tries to form public opinion through instructions to China's media, internet companies, and publishing industry. It also oversees education. The department has instructed the Encyclopedia of China Publishing House to produce the project.
The Chinese government attempts to control what information is shared on the internet. However, citizens comment on news or post photos on social media all the time. Chinese censors then try to remove unwanted posts or block some messages from being searched. China also regularly blocks overseas sites, including Facebook and Twitter. It also has blocked Wikipedia's English and Chinese versions at times. Jiang Lijun is a top editor at the Encyclopedia of China publishing house. She said that her group plans to write entries on political leaders, the history of the Communist Party, and subjects including virtual reality, artificial intelligence, and the European Union. Zhang also said the encyclopedia will write entries about subjects that are less likely to change, or with academic value, rather than current events. However, she said that they will try to strike a balance between being timely and what people are searching for. Zhang chose not to comment on how the website would present events that are politically sensitive in China. These include the Cultural Revolution and the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests.
Chao Mu is an independent media analyst in Beijing. He said the Chinese encyclopedia would be quite different from Wikipedia. It will have to follow rules on presenting disputed information. If it's not blocked in China, the publisher must accept censorship, either self-censorship or censored by authorities, he said. He said the encyclopedia would probably only present one official version of sensitive historical events. It will likely not include items like the Tiananmen Square protests or the outlawed Falun Gong spiritual group. Currently, these items cannot be found on the internet in China. Zhang said that the encyclopedia will only be in the Chinese language at first. However, her group is researching if a version in English would be possible. She also said they met with a team from Wikipedia to learn from their experience creating the online encyclopedia.
Wikipedia is edited by hundreds of thousands of volunteers around the world. The site has more than 40 million articles and is available in nearly 300 languages. More than 900,000 entries are in Chinese, compared with more than 5 million in English. Zhang says, "There is Chinese content on Wikipedia too, but sometimes it is not as accurate as it could be." Encyclopedia editor Zhang Baichun also is a professor of the history of science and technology. He said the online version will make it easier to reach more and younger readers. Zhang said there is a process to create entries for sections like the history of science and technology. He said, first, the professors from the Chinese Academy of Sciences, Institute of Natural Sciences, hold meetings with experienced and young experts in their fields to form a committee. The committee then finds the most knowledgeable person on a topic to write a version of the article. The version is then reviewed by a section chief editor and finally by the committee. If there is a difference of opinion, all deputy and chief editors should participate in the discussion and figure it out together, Zhang said. We will reason things out with the author until we reach an agreement or change the author. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Phil Dierking.
Many musicians are turning to new forms of technology to reach more people through their smartphone and electronic devices. Performers are using virtual reality, 360-degree cameras, and other tools in hopes of providing the best musical experience possible. A 360-degree camera can take a video or still photograph of everything in its line of sight. Some music experts believe VR could greatly change our musical experiences in the future. One form of the technology can let users attend virtual concerts, where they become part of the action. These performances seem to come to life through video and VR glasses. Members of the rock band Queen created one such concert last year in cooperation with Google's online store, Google Play. The project recreated the famous Queen song Bohemian Rhapsody in a music video. The group first released the song more than 40 years ago. A computer program or app can let people experience different parts of the music video by moving around and touching things in virtual reality. The interactive experience results from a combination of computer animation, 3D images, and 360-degree video technology. Some musicians and groups are now using VR as part of their live performances. American country music singer Eric Church has launched a full VR concert experience that was recorded during an actual performance last year. People can buy the experience and view it on their personal devices with the help of VR headsets. Church said it was his first time using VR technology to provide a 360-degree view of a live show. "There was a camera between me and my drummer, and you can kind of turn around and see the drummer and turn back around and see me," he said. "It's like you're in the middle of everything." The rock group Young the Giant recently shot a live performance in Los Angeles with 360-degree cameras above, below, and throughout the crowd. The performance was made into a music video for the song Silver Tongue. The video shows the band's members and other people painted in bright colors as they dance to the music. Band member Payem Duseda said it is not easy recreating a real concert for somebody watching the experience on a smartphone. "You're viewing it on a smaller screen, and maybe you don't have headphones on, so you're not hearing the full sound," he said. YouTube is currently one of the biggest providers of music videos on the internet. The website says about 60% of YouTube viewing now happens on devices, not computers or televisions. To make these experiences better and more exciting, music artists are turning to mobile-friendly tools. Pop singer Ingrid Michaelson made a music video using only Snapchat filters. The video, called Hell No, is filmed in phone-style view as a way to connect with Snapchat users. The electronic band Gorillaz released a 6-minute VR music video that became the most successful VR video debut on YouTube. It was seen more than 3 million times in 48 hours. Another band, Saint Motel, is creating music videos with what it calls a virtualizer. This method combines lyric and live performance videos and images in a 360-degree video environment. Band member A.J. Jackson said Saint Motel does not plan to stop creating traditional music videos. But he added that smartphones have provided many exciting ways to experiment, create, and find new fans. "It's a lot of people's first VR experience," Jackson said. "You've got to take it slow, and you've got to make sure everyone's first experience is great." I'm Brian Lynn.
From VOA, Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Technology has changed the way we live, and especially the way we work. For many jobs, workers no longer need to be in a fixed office building. People can telework. They can work from home or any place where they can access the necessary technology. For example, I wrote this story on a backyard porch in the mountains of West Virginia. A 2015 survey from the company Gallup found that 37% of Americans worked from home. In 1995, that number was only 9%. It is easy to think that this freedom to work whenever or wherever is good for workers and for families. As it turns out, teleworking is both good and bad. A new report warns that some forms of teleworking may blur the line between our personal and professional lives. In other words, some teleworkers may have a hard time keeping their personal life separate from their professional life. This report claims that this blurring may have negative effects on the health and well-being of teleworkers. The report, titled Working Anytime, Anywhere: The Effects on the World of Work, is a combined effort by the International Labor Organization and the research institute Eurofound. It looks at the pros and cons, or the advantages and disadvantages, of teleworking from home. The report looked at 15 countries, including Argentina, Brazil, India, Japan, the United States, and 10 European nations. Oscar Vargas is with Eurofound, and John Messenger is from the International Labor Organization. The two co-wrote the report. They say the findings of the study are unclear and, in some cases, contradictory. For example, the researchers found that, on the one hand, teleworkers report reduced commuting time, more time for their families, and a better balance between work and personal life. On the other hand, they also report an increase in working hours, a blurring of the boundaries between paid work and personal life, and more work-life interference. For some people, teleworking adds more family work conflict. For others, teleworking lowers family work conflicts. For some people, teleworking lowered stress. For others, it led to higher levels of stress and other health problems, such as sleep disorders. Vargas explains that some of the pros are less commuting time and greater freedom, or as he says, autonomy. One of the cons is working longer hours.
Among the positive effects, we find the reduction of commuting time, greater working time autonomy, leading to more flexibility, better overall work-life balance, and higher productivity. There are also disadvantages. For example, these workers tend to work longer.
How teleworking affects the health and lifestyle of the workers seems to depend on how much and what type of teleworking they are doing. The study puts teleworkers into three categories: those who work commonly from home, those who work from several locations outside an office, and those who work both in an office and off-site. Vargas notes the study found that 20% of people in Europe who worked in an office reported high levels of stress. Compare this to 40% of stressed-out people in Europe engaged in high-intensity work at home. He said the findings were similar for those who suffer from sleep disorders. The report also states that teleworkers who are out of the office too often say they feel isolated or separate from their colleagues and the work environment. Messenger told VOA that always working away from the employer's work site seems to be more negative. One of the downsides is this isolation. He calls this a disconnect from coworkers and from the organization as well.
This constant work outside the employer's premises seems to be more negative. And one of the downsides is this isolation, this disconnect from coworkers, and, of course, from the organization as well.
Also, the high-intensity teleworkers that we talked about earlier may have a difficult time turning off their work. Vargas explains that there are upsides for those who telework part-time or not all the time. He said this was good not only for the workers, but also for employers and companies.
The findings show that if workers do it on a part-time basis, this way of working can be associated to positive outcomes, both for workers but also for employers and companies.
Messenger adds that 2 or 3 days seems to be the sweet spot, or the most effective balance. Half the time in the office and half the time outside the office seems to help avoid these isolation and disconnect issues.
2 or 3 days a week seems to be the sweet spot. So half your time in the office and half your time outside the office. And that helps to avoid these isolation and disconnect issues.
Messenger explains that many organizations have developed policies to overcome this problem. They set maximum numbers of days per week during which people can work outside the employer's work site. Usually, employees are able to telework 2 or 3 days a week. Authors of the report urge policymakers to pass legislation that addresses telework issues. These issues include such things as extra work, which is often viewed as unpaid overtime. They said employers should pay teleworkers for the extra work they do at home. The report also recommends measures such as shutting down computer servers outside working hours and not sending employees emails when they are on holiday. The researchers suggest that turning off all electronic devices and rest periods for teleworkers will also help avoid negative effects on workers' health and well-being. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.